welcome to our Biz Huddle podcast. I'm your host, Mitch Cuthbert, Creative Director at Baker Creative. If you haven't already subscribed to the channel, please hit subscribe so you can get notified when new content comes out. Please share this with anyone who could be inspired by it.
Paula Haynes is the Chief Executive Officer of Freedom A La Carte, a nonprofit catering, social enterprise, and workforce development program that serves and supports survivors of human trafficking. Freedom A La Carte was named Best Caterer by Columbus CEO and received the Ohio Restaurant Association Nourishing Our Community Award. A graduate of University of Kentucky with a bachelor's degree in advertising, Paula was previously the owner and creative director of Touchpoint Strategies, a pharmaceutical sales representative for Smith, Kline, Beachman, and Sandoz. Welcome, Paula.
Welcome, Paula. Thank you so much for joining us on our podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
So I found that your business and the story behind it is very compelling. Can you tell me how you got involved in the business?
Yes. So Freedom A La Carte's been around as the social enterprise since 2011, helping women who've been sex trafficked to gain employment and empower them to live a self-sufficient life. I was introduced to the organization in 2013 as a volunteer. I attended just an informational course that they had on learning about human trafficking. And it was something that I kept hearing about, but I didn't really understand. And when I attended, I thought, wow, you know, I was blown away. I didn't know this was happening. I didn't understand all of the complexities behind prostitution and how someone never really stopped to think how someone gets involved in that, you know? Right. And just really felt compelled to help these women find their worth. They've been kind of shoved down to the lowest place in society, and I wanted to help lift them up. So I got involved. I loved the social enterprise model, especially for nonprofits. I thought it was brilliant to bring in a business piece to help generate revenue. I loved the model of helping someone get a job and get the training so that they can then take care of themselves. All of that resonated with me, and I love to cook. So I just hopped into the kitchen and got involved. And, you know, with me, I'm either all in or I'm not in. And so I just did more and more. And I shared my marketing business talents with them and started a fundraiser and was on their board of directors. And in 2016, you know, we were trying to find the new leader of the organization. And we went through a couple of hires in 12 months and neither one worked out. And when the second one that, you know, the board determined that that wasn't the right person, I offered to step off the board and be the interim director. Just selfishly, because I was so integrated, like all of the questions always came to me, it seemed like anyway. And I felt like I wanted to have that, that freedom to make decisions with that authority. And so I stepped in and, you know, my husband looked at me one day and said, you should just do this. And I was like, oh my gosh, can I? Like, I really want to do it. Just keep doing it. So I just haven't left. Yeah.
So what is the journey like for a survivor becoming, you know, involved in the group? What would that journey be like?
Well, we partner with the specialty docket in Franklin County called Catch Court. And Catch stands for Changing Actions to Change Habits. And that is a specialty docket for specifically for women who've been identified as victims of sex trafficking. And so that's kind of our first. We partner really closely with them. We take lunches in each week. The women in the program meet every Thursday. So we are there with lunch. We started a mentorship program, and, you know, over the years, we've just became very integrated together and in helping these women succeed through that program. So that's kind of our first touch point. And, you know, it's, these women have had so many people in their lives use them and abuse them that there's not a lot of trust, and that trust doesn't happen overnight. So you know, being there as an organization and as, you know, fellow women that are there to listen and support them, that takes time. So over the years, we're building that trust. Then we realized that the women couldn't get jobs. And so then the social enterprise started, like I said, in 2011. And then from there, we noticed that once the women graduate these programs like CATCH, or they might leave our workforce to work somewhere else, we were seeing relapse. And we realized that the community of support that we offered is so important. Like, the women have all these resources when they're in a program, but then they leave the program and all those resources kind of fall away. So we started what we call the Butterfly Program. And any woman that's a victim, that's overcome that lived experience of experiencing sex trafficking, with 6 months sobriety or more, can become a butterfly. And we have all the same resources. We'll help with housing, case management, help you with your education, can have employment coaching. Even if you're not working within our workforce development program, we'll still help you write your resume, get a job somewhere else, like whatever you want to do. If you run into an emergency with your housing, you know, somebody might have a nice job, but they get sick and they're out for 2 weeks and then they're behind and they can't catch up on their rent. You know, those are situations where we can come in and pay that for you just to help you, so you can continue on the path, right? Instead of falling off. So continue with all that.
What do you think would be the most surprising thing that most people don't know about women being, or anyone being, human trafficked?
I think the most surprising thing is that 40% of, over 40% of the women who are trafficked are first recruited by a family member. So it happens very close. People have a picture in their mind of, like, the movie Taken, when someone's kidnapped and they, you know, think of a van and somebody being pulled off the street, or, you know, off when they're at the mall or something. And really, it's about relationships. And it's a lot of what we call psychological kidnapping, where they build a relationship with you. You know, maybe a lot of women refer to their trafficker as their boyfriend, because that's the kind of, that's how the relationship might start. And then it progresses on. But, you know, within the family, and it's hard to detect in the families, because we're all so good at family secrets. Mm-hmm. And no one wants to let that cat out of the bag that something this horrible is happening within their family. And so there's nobody to turn to, because everyone's just kind of knows it's going on, but you're just kind of pretending like you don't know.
How does someone regular, like outside of that unit, be able to help someone that may be human trafficked?
Well, I think getting education. We do offer lots of lunch and learn opportunities where we'll come in and kind of help you look for red flags and just understand that behavior. But like with young people, because a lot of those patterns happen young, but the vulnerable are those living in poverty, those that have a unstable family life, those that have been sexually abused, those that have substance abuse within their family. So that's all around them. But it's, you know, we think, okay, that's probably the highest at risk, but it doesn't mean it doesn't happen. Like in the suburban high-end neighborhoods, because it's definitely happening there too. But it's people who are vulnerable in whatever state that might be. So you start to look for patterns of change within the young people. You know, all of a sudden, this straight A student is not wanting to go to school, or is skipping classes, is, you know, this really change of pattern. All of a sudden, they're coming home and they've got like their nails done, which they never did before. And they're have some extra cash around, and they're spending money on things they hadn't spent money on before. Just looking for changes. A lot of times they'll be withdrawn because someone talks them into doing something that they're not quite sure they want to do, but they do it anyway. And then that's held hostage over their head. And there's lots of shame and guilt around that. And you'll see a lot of that withdrawal over a period of time. So it's very complex and very, very complicated and changes based on the different individuals. You know, it looks different in different situations. If you're a healthcare worker, we would be telling you to look for different things, bruising, tattoos on different parts of your body that might have like a name or a gang name on it. So,
okay. That's good to know. So then what age would that start from, what to what?
So 13 is the average age nationally for someone to be trafficked. So those teenage years when we as individuals are the most vulnerable anyway, you know, these predators know how to manipulate someone. And so that's what's going on. So those are the most vulnerable years. But the women that we work with are we work with the adults. So they're anywhere between usually 22 to, we've had women over 60.
Then if, say we saw someone that kind of had some of these clues, how do you best approach someone? Or if someone is being abused, what would be the recommendation for it to help them get out?
Yes. So if you see something, say something, right? Like anything that we learn. And so the human trafficking hotline, I think everyone should have in their phone. So if they see something, it doesn't hurt to call and just say, hey, this doesn't feel right. This doesn't look right. And they can, even if you have someone in your circle of influence that you're concerned about, you can call them too, and they can direct you to the right resource. Because when you call the hotline, it's directed to an agency locally that's fielding those calls. So you know that you've got someone there that can really help you. You're not calling someone in Washington, D.C. You know, you're calling someone here local.
Do you see a lot of, because of the abuse, any connection between mental health, the suicide, a lot of drug use?
Yes, absolutely. And it's, you know, hard when you listen to cases, rather that comes first or second, right? The mental health abuse and the drug addiction are very intertwined. So they're both involved, and they both play a part. A lot of it is either you become addicted to drugs, and in order to continue that habit, which is real, you know, you need those drugs to live, you start to sell yourself for sex for that purpose. And then you get drawn further and further into where that money's not actually yours anymore. Someone else is profiting. So that's part of that process. Or, you know, at a young age, you've been abused and you started to be trafficked for sex. You've been exploited, right? So you start numbing yourself with the drugs, and you know, anyone that's experienced that exploitation of sexual abuse of any kind knows that mental health is something that has to be addressed to help you through that trauma. So it's all very, very much relatable to one another.
Yeah. So being in this business for a while, what do you see other women business owners, the mistakes, what mistakes do you see them make?
Oh, gosh, I don't know if I can answer that. I think the biggest thing is trying to do it by yourself, like in isolation. I think the thing that I've learned, I stepped into this role and I didn't know what I was doing. And I knew I didn't know what I was doing. So I was open to reaching out to others to kind of help guide me and teach me, how do you do this? What should I do here? Kind of mentality. I don't know that I've always had that approach, but in this situation I did, because I very much knew I'd never done this before. And through that, I've built so many wonderful relationships and gotten so much good advice and found new ways to approach things. I wouldn't be where I am today, and this organization wouldn't be where it is if I didn't have the women around me that I've done, that I've built. And it's through different organizations, just organically, you know, it's been my lifeblood as a businesswoman.
So when it's all said and done, and you want to retire or step away, what would you like your legacy to be personally?
So that's interesting because my husband and I recently moved into our Airstream motorhome, and we're like living this life of intention. Like everything we do is very intentional. And when I'm working, it's very intentional because I think we learned during the pandemic, you can work remotely and be very effective. And so I'm able to work remotely when we're traveling, and then we'll come back to Columbus and I'll be here in the office. And then we kind of have this pattern. But it helps me to think about retirement, which doesn't seem to, like it's as close, because I've kind of found this wonderful place where I am right now. But when I stop doing this, they'll probably have to pull me out someday and say, Paula, your brain is just not handling it. But when I do, I would want people to, the legacy to be a team of people that realize that they can make an impact on others. Like just that positive impact, like being nice and treating people with kindness and respect, rather it's your staff or the client you're working with. Like I want kind of that to carry on. From a greater legacy perspective, I am excited that the women coming through our program are creating their own legacy. Like these women are, for the first time, you know, getting a job and paying their bills and saving up and buying a car and moving into their own apartment and getting their GED, might be going to college. They are living their dream. And that's impacting not just themselves, but their children and their grandchildren and their siblings. Like that's that overall arching legacy that I vision I have for Freedom a la Carte.
I think that's a pretty awesome one.
Oh, thanks.
Well, I mean, you know, everybody has their own journey. Everybody has their own way. And it just, even here at my business, it's never really about me. It's, you know, it's much bigger.
Yeah. It's much bigger, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think yours is specifically just the impact is so profound. It's not just the generation today, but like you were saying, the multiple generations of tomorrow. And that's a pretty big deal.
We can all like have a legacy no matter what it is. Like ours is pretty obvious because we are a workforce development program, we're a nonprofit, like that's top line who we are. But also, you know, as a business and a social enterprise, you know, one of the things that I mentioned before that I'm so passionate about is running this nonprofit social enterprise like a business, that when people walk in the doors to our cafe, they see the same quality as when they walk into Fox in the Snow or, you know, any of the other cafes in town, that it's at a high level, that there's attention to detail, that the product's outstanding, that the space is someplace that you want to sit and hang out, that's important, that level is there. And I think that if we all can think about how do we make our businesses the top, and what are they giving back to society, there's always something there that we're giving back.
Well, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much. I think a lot of people will get a lot out of this.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
If you haven't already subscribed to the channel, please hit subscribe so you can get notified when new content comes out. Please share this with anyone who could be inspired by it. And feel free to post any questions so we can be inspired by new content. Thanks for listening. If you're interested in learning more, visit our website at bakercreative.co.